Ocho, episode number 184. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me. That's right. The dynamic duo is back again. We're really not that dynamic, to be honest. We're kind of static duo. We're just kind of the same.
We're boring right now. We're very drawn out and tired. Not very dynamic.
Not very dynamic at all. We are in Las Vegas, more specifically. We are at the Casa de Cold Coffee at the moment. Of course, we are covering UFC 229, Khabib versus McGregor. It's going to be quite possibly the biggest event in UFC history. Dana White keeps telling us it will be, and we'll get to that.
He wouldn't lie.
He would not mislead us at all.
And now when they make it seem like, oh, 3 million pay-per-views, and we're easily 3.5 million.
Connor said 3.5. Well, of course, he's going to be shooting high-end. Can you imagine? Yeah. He said today that might be a $50 million payday for him, man. That's amazing.
So what do you think that works out to? I was trying to do the math in my head. So what is it, $60 a pay-per-view?
Right.
All right, so $60 a pay-per-view times, say, 3 million. That's roughly 180 million. Okay, unless my math is really, really bad. Maybe it is. Right? 60? Yeah, 180 million. So if he's getting like 50 million, that means he's getting an over a third share of what's going on.
It's pretty strong.
It is, especially when he wants to, in his mind, I think he's been pushing for like co-promoter sort of thing. That's about as close as you're probably going to get.
That would treat him like a co-promoter right there. But right. You know what? Hey, you know what? I'm not going to lie. If that's the case, he deserves it. I mean, he's the one that gets this attention right now. Yeah. Nobody else.
Well, think about it. They're still on the UFC side. They're probably like, well, shit, if we still get 100 and whatever.
Of course.
100 and something million out of it, give, you know, Khabib, even though I doubt he's going to get like 30 million or whatever. I don't know what his workout is.
I bet Khabib. You know what? I bet
Because it's not going to be the same. He's not going to get the same percentage.
I bet Khabib is probably, and this is not educated info. This is simply a guess. 7 to 8 million.
I was thinking roughly 10, 15.
Yeah. Oh, boy, if he did that, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking because before, even when Nate did great numbers, that was nowhere near 3.5 million.
No. Well, I don't think the guarantee will be anywhere there. So, yeah, saying the pay-per-views. Yeah.
I'm saying with the pay-per-views.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm interested to see what the guaranteed pay sheet will be. I'm sure Connor will have some new record high guaranteed pay sheet. Yeah. You know, maybe it's 5 million, something like that. We'll see. But you're right. It's going to be all based on that back end. There's no question about it. So,
what if it's even more?
The guarantee. You think the guarantee would be more than 5?
I wonder.
Because I mean, it's just at that point, it's just window dressing.
Yeah.
It's just window dressing.
Right. Because especially because he already knows what he's going to get, and that's just upfront money.
Right.
You know, like you said, guaranteed money. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 10 million.
Wow. That's going to be crazy because if he does that, that's a precedent for later on down the road. Not that many people
are
that. Well, that's what I was going to say. Not that Conor McGregor has many peers right now when it comes to promotional value,
right.
But if somebody does reach that SAS, I mean, at one point, Ronda was unbeatable in terms of production value or promotional value. At one point, yeah. Brock was, and now you are. So crazy. All right, let's say this. I'm sure you might say, John, Cold Coffee, where are the guest journalists? Where are your friends from around the world that are hanging out? Well, the truth is, man, they're all working, damn it. I mean, we were working, damn it. It's been a busy day, man, from the media day in the morning to the press conference at night. Everybody's trying to get their work done. And listen, we wanted to set up at Beer House, which is a fantastic little joint right across from Park Theater and T-Mobile Arena. But as it turned out, tonight was also the first night of the Vegas Golden Knights regular season. And it didn't go so well for them.
Or, by the time you hear this, unless something drastically changes. Last we saw, it was like 8 minutes left, and they were down 3 goals.
So. Yeah, not so good. Not a great way to start the night. But bottom line is there just wasn't a lot of space for us to hang out, so we had to retreat to the Casa de Cold Coffee and set up shop here. So I will apologize in advance that we couldn't bring one of our global friends that we like
you
to talk to from town. I definitely wanted
to. We were hoping to get like at least the Submission Radio Boys on.
Oh yeah,
like
they're having
the other guys.
Yeah, but it just didn't work. They had to work just like we did. So, it is a big media turnout. I mean, there are media here from all around the globe. It's as packed as I remember any media session. Not quite as packed as, say, Maymac, for example. But that's because boxing does things a little different. They basically will allow anybody that applies for the most part to get in. They like the show of force or whatever. The UFC doesn't quite do that, but what we're seeing is interest from around the world. today it was amazing. You know, after we finished the press conference, you know, we've actually been doing radio recaps. Of course, you've been filming in them. Myself and Mike Bond have been doing regular video recaps every single day this week. It's just about kind of what's going on.
It's funny you said radio recaps.
Oh, did I say radio recaps?
Too that's funny. How much we do radio recaps.
That's how much we
it's
do radio
ingrained.
Recaps.
Daily recaps.
Daily recaps of what's going on. Too funny. And it's not something that we normally do, but, you know, maybe we can do more of it if people dig it. But it's funny because, you know, we were setting up.
Even if you don't dig it, we're still going to do
it. We'll do it anyway. But it was funny to look around. I mean, you know, you had your camera positioned there and me and Mike Bond set up in front. And then, you know, right next to us was some Latin media.
Yeah.
The fighting crew was over there, over here. Some people I didn't recognize. Oh, no. It was the fan house people were right here to the left. And then some people I didn't recognize, and then Submission Radio Boys.
I think we started
first. And then you
look
down here.
I think they've followed
just,
our lead.
There were people everywhere. Were cameras everywhere. You know,
cool.
It was it damn near looked like a presidential election coverage or something. You know what I mean? Like people were all standing up doing their one shot or doing their two shot. It's crazy how much interest there is. So I know that people are saying that Dane is crazy, and we're kind of joking about it now. I mean, you know, he's saying, look, I'll say two and a half. Then you got Connor up there going, I'm hearing three and a half, that sort of thing. I will say, though, man, I will not be shocked if this thing does those kind of numbers, man. The numbers of interviews that I've been doing and people from around the nation and people from around the world that are showing interest in this fight, I get it. It's a far-fetched number. But didn't we feel like Maymac was a far-fetched number when people were telling us it was going to be $3 or $4 million, and then it ends up doing it? And I kind of feel like we're in that position again. I think the problem is inside the bubble, a lot of us have a problem realizing how big Conor is, man. I mean, I think this is one of those fights that people that don't buy pay-per-views will buy. I mean, my mom might buy this pay-per-view. My dad might buy this pay-per-view. You know what I mean? People that don't watch fights will buy this because it's Conor McGregor.
I agree with you, but I also I just don't know. I don't know if we're going to reach anywhere near. I think with the thing with the Floyd Mayweather, you had two huge stars besides the whole crossover thing. And let's be honest, Khabib's star power is nowhere near Floyd Mayweather's.
Agreed.
So I think in this case, you're going to have people that want to see Conor, and there's going to be a lot of people who want to see Conor, but you're not going to get the crazy people that are just tuning in to see this because it's about Conor fighting this other legend and this whole boxing thing. You know, I think you're still going to have people that are somewhat into the sport to really fully get it. I mean, I think we'll have some people that are just Conor fans and they want to watch Conor fight. So they're going to watch Conor fight. I think when it was Conor and Floyd, you had boxing fans that wanted to watch it and you had Floyd fans that wanted to watch it. I think there will be people that are Khabib fans that want to watch it. I just don't see it coming out in full, you know, so many crazy numbers. I mean, the Russians are all going to just hack it and steal it anyways. They're not actually going to pay for it.
Well, they don't have to pay pay-per-view anyway. We're the only idiots that pay pay-per-view. But I guess here's what I think, and I think you're right. I mean, you're definitely right about that. You know, Khabib is not even comparable to Floyd Mayweather in terms of star value. But I do think about this. Maybe it's the storyline, right? Okay, I mean, you're right. It's not a superstar, but when you sell the character, and that's of course what the UFC is doing,
right?
It is a guy that's undefeated, which there's very few of those in martial arts,
right?
And it is the Russian, and I do still think there's a little bit of that, you know, bro, he's this Russian monster.
Right.
I mean, it goes back to Rocky IV, right? I mean, we joke. I mean, not that Khabib is anything like Ivan Drago or whatever, but it's just you can sell that storyline. It's a storyline that kind of makes sense in our brains. Like, oh, what? He's taking on an undefeated Russian, you know, monster.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. You know, I might be in for that. Whereas, no disrespect, but, you know, if it was Tony Ferguson, if it was Dustin Poirier, if it was maybe even Nate Diaz, except with Nate Diaz, man, they have those awesome two fights before.
Yeah.
I don't think you would be looking at the same kind of sales. Because
that I
don't think the time, I don't think the storyline, so to speak, is the same.
Yeah, that I totally agree upon. I just think that if they were really trying to do that route, I think they would have, you know, Khabib certainly, I mean, he's going out there, he's taking this very, very seriously, but he's embrace the fact that he's not trying to sell this fight. He's not going to go out there and shit talk. He's not going to play the monster role. He's not going to play the, you know, the red commie role over here that's coming to destroy democracy,
right,
or whatever. And especially now that he's not even fighting Americans. So I think most Americans are like, whatever. We like that Conor guy, you
right.
know. I don't know. It's just interesting. I think it's going to do great, but I still feel that you know, people have to know who Khabib is, because right now the UFC, like the lead up for this, the promotion for this has just been really weird. Like, it's leaning all on this Conor footage of breaking into the bus, you know, sort of this other stuff. But I haven't felt like the UFC has really built up Khabib in my eyes. Like, I haven't felt the promotion pushing him, really promoting the fact that he is undefeated. You see a couple little things, but I feel like it's sandwiched in there within four or five Conor promos.
Yeah.
You might have a little teeny inkling of Khabib's story. And I just feel like it baffles me. I just, like, you want this guy, you want people, you know, you would think you would want to play both sides, but they're clearly showing their hand and who is their golden child in this, because I just feel like the promotion is so heavily skewed in Conor's favor that I'm not feeling the buildup like we should for a fight that they're expecting to be the biggest fight ever.
I hadn't thought about it, but now that I'm sitting here and you voiced that, you're right. You know, because I think about it, the promotion. Now, they've had some great promo materials, right?
Yeah.
But it's all built around one or two things. Either Conor McGregor is Conor McGregor or the bus incident, right? I think, just back to Dallas, how much was Darren Till built up as this amazing challenger? You know what I mean? Like that. It was like the storyline was all around, like, okay, yes, you know Tyron, but do you know this beast that he's about to be fighting?
That's a good example, because I felt in that case they built him up to where he seemed like an equal, and almost he was guaranteed to take him down. You know, like, you know, you probably have some people out there saying, like, oh, that's because Dana wants Tyron gone. You know, of course they were pumping up the, you know, the other guy, but you're right. In that case, I felt
you could have had highlight reels of slams and takedowns, and
I mean,
Khabib.
There's certainly enough stuff out there that they could have did something. They could have did more stories. They could have went to his hometown, you know, talked to the people, you know, talked to people that did something. I mean, just something to give us more hype on that end. And I just,
that's interesting.
I just feel like they didn't do a good enough job pushing it. And with him coming out and playing it, you know, keeping everything close to his sleeve, he's not going out there. He's putting his head down when Conor's talking shit, and he's just wait till the date, you know, and just playing it very, very quiet. Like,
something
that's not
going to
bring in the casual.
Helped.
That's not going to – the casual's just going to be like, oh, you know. And sorry, Tony, I don't think you're the first person that coined casuals and hardcores. I think that's been going out for a while. So I'm not going to give you credit when I say casuals right there. You know, I'll give all credit to Catman Sandu.
Oh, Tony Ferguson's been on a roll this
Chatman can do.
Chatman can do.
Chatman can do.
He's been calling out our buddy Shamak Karsandu, calling him Chatman can do.
I love it. But I don't know. It just
let me ask you a question, because I think you're right. You hit on something here that I hadn't really thought about, and now it intrigues me. You're years away from your time at the UFC, but I wonder. I mean, sometimes I think things are conscious decisions about the way they want to build things, but also, I mean, you're talking about content creators and video editors and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe it wasn't necessarily intentional? It's just that everybody knows that Conor McGregor is basically, you know, the financial cash line right now for the company, that the people building those promos just thought, hey, we got to build around our guy? Or do you think it was a conscious decision?
I think probably a little bit of both. One, I mean, they're going to look at what footage do we have.
Right.
You know, and part of that's going to entail where have you sent crews out? Where do we have footage of? You know, we got fighting, you know, we got footage of Conor here, and training here. All right, what do we have on the other side? Well, we got this little footage. We got some fight footage.
A couple you press know, conferences here and there.
And, I mean, let's be real. I mean, like, there used to always be as well, when they put a promo, who always watched it and got a final say on it. You know, Dana had his hands on it. You know, I think eventually, you know, other VPs and other production guys underneath him learn to kind of skew things a particular way. They know what Dana likes, so let's go that certain way. So I could see where they would maybe shape it a certain way if he's always kind of did. But a lot of it comes to, you know, what footage you have and sort of the idea. But I think they're probably – a lot of these guys are getting pitched ideas about Conor, or they're just going that route because they know if it's Connor, it's going to get probably a good chance of airing. It's probably going to get a good chance to get the green light to produce the promo, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely just feel that, you know, one, there's more footage because they've taken the time to follow Connor and invest the money in capturing this guy all over the place, you know, whereas I just don't think it was done the same in the other. And, I mean, it's understandable. I mean, Khabib's probably a lot more private.
He's not going to give you, you know, he's not going to beautiful, you know, lines and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but I mean, you still build him up as the undefeated Russian
still
monster.
Gotta, you still
the mystery.
Do your part.
I mean, Fedor never said anything, right? But
right.
Fedor had that aura about him,
right.
You know. So
well,
all right,
he had lots of great old footage. As
he
well,
did have
too.
A lot of great
so
footage.
That goes to there's got to be footage. There's got to be stuff that you can lean upon.
All right, so you're not buying into – I mean, listen, where Connor's talking $3.5 million, that's – I don't want to say it's crazy talk because I've learned my lesson. Anything with
right.
Connor is possible.
That's
but
true.
Do you feel at least – the record is 1.6, and that was Diaz-McGregor 2. That was definitely huge, off the charts.
This
feel,
should beat that.
You feel like it beats that, right?
It
I mean,
beat that.
I say 2 is conservative. 2 is conservative?
I think, yeah, 2's very realistic.
Yeah.
2.5 is probably
– Top of
is
the
– probably – where I'm thinking it might go, yeah.
Because the indicators that, you know, and listen, when Dana, I know a lot of people try to criticize that Dana's just like pulling these numbers out of a
yeah.
hat. There are tools that they're using.
Yeah.
I mean, there are analytics in terms of, you know, how many Google search views are we getting? How
right.
many hits is USC.com getting? How many views are our promo
right.
videos getting? How,
well,
you know,
I even asked him in that scrum. I said, when you said it was trending, what does that equate to?
Right.
Does that equate to pre-buys? Or, like, people just interest. And I think he said pre-buys. So if that's the point where they're like, okay, at this point we've already reached a bunch of people pre-buying, maybe they've already done pretty darn good numbers. You know, I mean, who knows? I mean, I know a lot of us, and we've even done the radio guys did daily debates on when people actually pull the trigger and pull the wallet out and
yeah.
purchase it. And it usually happens a lot closer. Like, it would probably be happening today or tomorrow.
Yeah, I never bought pay-per-views. But when I use
the day of.
The day of.
I mean, like,
yeah.
why spend your money right now if shit's going to happen tomorrow?
You never know. What if,
you never
oh,
know.
I got invited to a party. I don't need it anymore. Or, you know what I mean? Or somebody.
Yeah,
or I got called into work or whatever.
Well, I was just thinking, like, if Khabib or somebody can't make weight.
That too.
But, yeah, I mean, parties pop up. Gas money is needed.
Yeah.
You know, there's little things that happen. But, yeah, in my mind, I would always want to wait just to make sure that you don't put the money in and then, you know, something fall out and then have to try to do a refund
yeah.
process after the fact.
That's just, not fun.
That's a pain in the ass.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll talk about the financials after. Right now, let's talk about the fight card. I should say, by the way, and I didn't mention it, I'm sure some people might assume that we're drinking proper number 12. As everybody else seems to be in the MMA sphere, I will say that we are not. We are not drinking proper number 12. And I'm not hating because I do want to drink proper number 12, but I got to be honest, payday is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Payday is tomorrow. So today we went with the
award-winning
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
The American Red, White, and Blue. And it's funny because I stopped in the CVS to pick this up on the way back. I didn't even think to try to look because they have some liquor bottles in there.
CVS
I forgot to look.
Proper
I forgot to
12.
Look to see if they had it in there. And that's another reason. Yeah, we get paid and literally it's been work, go home, work, go home. We
yeah.
just haven't had the fucking time to try to even go to like a liquor store. And I didn't even think about it. Like, I literally walked by liquor bottles to get beer. And the last thing in my mind, all I thought about was like, we have to get back to the house, edit these videos, and then get to the podcast, but we just need something to drink while
gotta
we're
fuel.
Doing it.
Gotta have
so
a little
I didn't
fuel.
Even think about the fact that I was walking by possibly a bottle of proper 12.
I definitely do want to try proper number 12. Not necessarily because I feel like, you know, we need to do some review that everybody's doing right now, but I do like a good whiskey, and he is going after Jameson, and you and I both do like a little
I
Jameson.
I do like Jameson. That makes me not
he's
want
been,
to like it.
He's
but
been really going aggressive, man. F the Jameson brothers.
Right. What have
upset.
They done to him?
I was going to say also, the other thing about drinking proper number 12 is it kind of feels like a commercial for Connor, and he's definitely not paying us to do that for him. So I was thinking about maybe we could drink.
No, there was a few journalists that did that for him.
Khabib.
Let's talk whiskey.
Oh, that was terrible.
Great. Let's tell us how great
your
whiskey is.
What was he doing
is.
Talking whiskey in a press conference? And then Connor was like, come have a drink. And he was like, all right, I will. Sit your ass down,
yeah,
son.
Yeah, because he thought he said that some people said it wasn't, didn't taste that good or whatever.
He's like, don't come get any. That was good. I was going to say.
Not you.
I was going to say, just in retort to the proper number 12 and everybody drinking proper number 12 on their podcasts and radio shows and other things, mm-hmm. I was going to say we could drink Habib's proper number one bottled water.
I was going to say. I thought about that when the radio guys, Junkie Radio, has been having like proper 12 up the time. I was like, they should have some vodka or something.
Well,
I was
like, he doesn't drink.
But he doesn't drink.
So that's why I say proper number one bottle of water, which, you know, the.
Well, you couldn't say proper. You'd have to use some very Russian
term. Some Russian term, so it would be proper. I was even going to go with a tagline.
Or just call Nyet for no, like no alcohol. Yet one.
Then that screws up my tagline.
My tagline
was going to be, when thirst hit you like Irish chicken, drink proper number one. It's not number one bullshit.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. See? I had a sales pitch for it and everything.
That's funny.
I was going to launch the product.
Yeah. You know, you can work on it.
Let's talk. Okay. What we've seen this week. We had open workouts yesterday. The open workouts were entertaining. You know, Habib did what you'd expect him to do. He grappled. He didn't do much, if any, striking at all.
None.
You kept saying, like, much.
I'm like, bro, he didn't do any. And that's what I said. I said, he's not going to show any fucking striking at all. And he didn't throw one punch.
You're right. He didn't throw one punch. I guess in my head, you know, he did have his hands up and he was showing some head movement.
Oh, yeah, and he was just, like, moving, waiting for the takedown. I'm going to come sweep your leg. I'm going to come do what I was like. Bro threw not one punch. Man.
So he didn't really tip his hand. Meanwhile, Connor did his open workout. He looked bigger to me. I feel like he's put on some muscle. I could be wrong,
yeah.
But I feel like since Maymac, it looks like his frame's filled out a little bit more. I think he's put on some weight, some strong muscle. I shouldn't say weight.
He's getting man strength.
He's dirty now, right?
Yeah,
He's turdy.
Tanks. Fellas.
So he's been that, but
he's
looked
getting
good.
That man strength now.
You definitely were reminded of how powerful he is and how accurate he is. Except that you did note, and I saw it a little bit too. Him and Owen Roddy had a couple moments that were a little off. I mean, that doesn't mean much in the course of a fight, but it was funny. I mean, they were definitely working some knees. They were definitely working some uppercuts, which you would think would play in to countering a wrestler, no question about it.
Yeah, for sure.
But there were a couple moments on the pads.
Yeah, it was just weird. There was a couple moments, you know, and people are probably going to criticize saying, oh, it looked great. There were moments where it did look great. But if you watch the whole thing back, there were definitely some miscommunications, even sometimes. Roddy's like, oh, my bad. You know, but I think there was definitely some times where it felt like they hadn't worked out together in a while. That's what it read to me. I was like, you know, granted, you know, one guy might have an off day and maybe, you know, holding mitts, you know, just off. But I'm like, if you're doing this over and over and over, like, you don't see it that often where a fighter and his mitt holder are not communicating like that. And there was a few times where we're just like, wow, man, have these guys not really been working out together?
And we're not making a ton of this, but it's just we're looking for anything we can, right? I mean, in these sessions, we're looking for any microscopic thing we can.
I mean, because if we take them all on their face value, they're all in the best shape that it is. You know, that's been the best training camp ever. And then when you get them up there and you see, and they're like, wow, you know, like, remember Max Holloway when he eventually fell up? Like, we watched that open workout, and we're all like, something's wrong.
Right.
You know, so there's definitely various signs that pop out when we're watching these things that you're just like, that you scratch your head, and then you go back later on, you're like, oh, okay, maybe there was something to it. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, I think we're trained to, you know, try to notice something that's out of the norm, and this was out of the norm
for me.
It just, they didn't seem whatever. But when he was, I mean – there were times when you could tell that it just felt a little off, but then they would go to something that was so ingrained that it was vicious. Then you're like, okay, even if shit was off, if that makes contact, he's good. Oh, okay, even though this was a little whatever, oh, if that makes contact, if that combo works, it's going to work. You know, so even though there were points where, to me, I was like, okay, something seems a little off, there were still way many more points the opposite way that were like, okay, that looked really solid, and if that combination works, you know, Khabib's going to be in for a rough night, you know. So
it was interesting, and then we had the press conference today, which we know what happened by now. I'm sure everybody's seen it. Of course, Conor McGregor was late. I think he was about a half hour late. Habib actually went on the stage by himself. Dana kind of had to chase him out after there to get the thing started. And Habib left after 15 minutes. Listen, I got to say, man, I respect Habib for doing this. I think that was smart. You know, he didn't play into Conor's game plan. And I think that was a brilliant move on his part.
Yep.
And it's funny because at first I was like, oh, this is a disaster. You know, of course, because we were all waiting for that face-off moment.
Yeah.
And I know Dana was playing spin control. I mean, that's his job to stand there and go, hey, it's not that bad. It's still going to be good tomorrow. But I will say, you know, kind of after I had a second to cool off and settle down after the press conference, it probably wasn't the worst thing. I mean, number one, God forbid something stupid would have happened, you know what I mean, and somebody gets hurt, somebody gets cut, or some, you know, somebody throws something or whatever, you know. Yeah. What I mean, God forbid anything like that happened. There was no opportunity for that to happen. And the other thing too is, you know, we didn't have a replay of New York where Conor's just yelling over Habib and that sort of thing. Honestly, at the end of the day, I never would have asked for it to be like it did today, but at first I thought, man, this is a disaster. How many pay-per-views did it cost them right now that people aren't talking about it? But they're still talking about it. They're talking about it because it was something different. It was something abnormal, and it even builds toward the ceremonial weigh-ins on Friday, I think, even a little bit more.
You're right. And it was funny because when he first came out, I was a little worried because I thought it still would be the point that I think – they were probably worried about New York, where once Habib started talking, the crowd started chanting, they started yelling. I was like, oh, this is what I was afraid of in New York or wherever, that the fact that you still wouldn't be able to hear him, you would only hear the fans. But they kind of calmed down after a moment. You know, they did their chants every once in a while, but for the most part, they let him speak. You know, you had a few random hecklers, you know, saying shit on the bus. And I think there was a shit on the bus chant.
They had a pretty good chant going for a little bit. It was pretty strong.
Know? So they did their part, you know, to kind of support their man Conor and kind of put Habib down. But you're right. I felt like you got to hear him. He got to answer questions. He got to speak. So I felt in his sake that was good, because I felt like he's the kind of guy that he's so focused. He just wanted to get there and fight. That he, if it did happen and Conor was there, he would just sit there and just
absolutely
let him
just get
talk.
Quiet.
You know, so in this
case. And even
case,
we got to hear some cool stuff from Conor, because instead of Conor being worried about silencing the other man and putting the other man down, he got to just talk about himself and talk about his accomplishments and talk about. And I think that's good. That's where he shines.
And it was interesting when he said that he's like, oh, he didn't say anything in New York, but he was probably up here talking all kinds of stuff. So in his head, he's definitely thinking that Habib was probably out there doing whatever, instead of just saying like, he didn't say shit in New York. I'm sure he didn't say shit here, whatever. But the fact that he said, oh, I'm sure he was talking, his mind was probably playing different scenarios in his own head, you know, so I'm sure, you know, so that maybe played a little bit into his head, you know, just like, you know, I saw our tweet that went earlier where it's like it was the counterpunch to what happened in New York.
That's right.
So maybe by the fact him leaving and not having Conor been able to hear what he actually said, that it played into Conor's mind that, oh, okay, maybe he was up here talking and now I didn't get to rebut any of it, you know, well, whatever with him, you know, the silly whatever rat cunt or whatever he was calling
him. It's just a rat Dagestani. I don't think. Did you say cunt?
I thought he. No, he said cunt in
did
there
he?
At some point. Yeah, yeah. I because I remember when
he's
I was
not Australian.
When
I mean, well, the English.
Well, he just calls
too.
Him cunt. Yeah, I mean, I like, but I. His wasn't the oh, you sick cunt, like a fun, like whatever. His was like the bad C word cunt. But yeah, I swear when I was watching it and he said it, I thought he dropped a C bomb.
Maybe he did. Normally I would be offended by such language, and I think I would hear it because it just bothers me so much.
Well, you've been hanging out so much with the Submission Radio guys, it's just like second nature.
Well, listen, it's a huge, huge fight. There's no question about it. I mean, I do think, you know, people are billing this as the biggest fight in UFC history. I do think it kind of comes down to how you measure it, but I think in terms of pay-per-view, this will be it. And we're getting close. We are getting close. Let's keep our fingers crossed that in the morning nothing goes wrong with the official weigh-ins. And to mark this tremendous occasion, we get to welcome a new sponsor on board as well.
Oh.
DraftKings.com. I'll be honest with you. I haven't had a chance to work with DraftKings ever before, and I'm excited about it. I've always kind of I don't partake myself in the gaming side of it because I worry a little bit as a reporter that it'll skew the way I look at things.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But you never want to bet on football. You never want to bet on
college
football.
See, but that's what, and I love the DraftKings. I love the DraftKings concept. So I'm so excited that they've reached out and that they're now joining up with the MMA Roadshow, as all quality sponsors should do. And listen, here's what they got going. As we know, the wait is finally over. This Saturday, Conor McGregor makes his return after 2 years, and he's looking to regain the title from Khabib Nurmagomedov. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the cage for the biggest fight of the year. Do battle against other MMA fans, and you can win $10,000. That's legit, son.
That's strong. If you haven't tried it yet, Fantasy MMA is easy to play. And the best news, it's free to enter with your first deposit. Just pick 6 fighters, you stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than with DraftKings, because nothing makes fight night more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line.
It's legit, man. You just got strategy to it. That's why, I've never done the MMA side again, because I don't want to skew it, but I've always been drawn to this product. I love the way they do it. So if you guys have been on the fence about it, you don't report, so you could jump on it, and I think you should.
And it's good for bragging. You know, you play, you win, and you get bragging rights. And with this, you could actually get some dough.
Yeah, you could get $10,000. Rampage Jackson said he makes it rain with 10 G's every time he goes to the strip club, so you can do that. But first, what you got to do is you got to download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code ROAD. That is R-O-A-D, ROAD. Like MMA Roadshow, to enter a contest for free with your first deposit. Free? That's promo code ROAD to get a free entry with your first deposit to the $10,000 fantasy MMA contest on Saturday night. That's code ROAD only at DraftKings.
That's right. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Bro, you can throw in $5 and you can get a free entry for 10 G's. I mean, that's worth it right there.
Right.
If you never do it again.
Right.
If you never do DraftKings again, put $5 in, because you're going to be watching this fight on Saturday night.
You're going to be watching.
Put $5 in and maybe you walk out with 10 G's. You can feel what it's like to be Conor McGregor, kind of like on a smaller basis.
A lot smaller.
All right, listen. I had a chance earlier in the week. I feel by this point probably everybody's heard all of the audio that's out there from Conor and Khabib. So rather than share parts of the press conference or something like that, I thought I would do is share a conversation I had earlier this week with Michael Bisping before we came out here. We live here. I live in Las Vegas.
Well, you came out to my house.
I am in your house. Maybe that's why it feels like it's such a far destination.
That's
before
right.
we
From
traveled
your house, it
all
is so
the
far.
Shut up! It's not that far.
So far.
15 minutes, you loser. You just
it's
don't like
much
driving.
Much further than 15 minutes.
I had a chance to talk to Michael Bisping before I drove the 15 minutes to Cold Coffee's house, and we talked about kind of this week. And he's going to be on the desk at Fox this weekend, and I just kind of wanted to get his take on everything and what he thought about the whole build up to the fight and the trash talking and everything that played out. And I thought it would be great to hear from the Count, man. I always love talking to Michael Bisping. Always one of my favorite fighters, and now becoming one of my favorite analysts as well. So here is Michael Bisping. I know you're busy, so we won't take too much of your time, but let's get into it, man. That's this huge fight that we've got coming up: Khabib Nurmagomedov, Conor McGregor. Look, you're a master of mental warfare, and Conor is certainly that guy as well. I wanted to get your analysis firsthand. What did you see in that press conference? Did you think Conor got to Khabib at all, or was Khabib able to resist?
Well, I mean, generally, for the most part, Khabib did a great job of just ignoring it, smiling, grinning, and not taking it to heart. But I think towards the end, we kind of saw Khabib rattled a little bit. You know, I think he got to him eventually. You know, now the good news is Khabib is that was a couple of weeks ago, so he will have calmed down. The bad news is that there's going to be another press conference on Thursday, you know, and that's what Conor's trying to do. He's trying to wind people up, trying to get you off your game, trying to get you to run it in just like Jose Aldo did, you know. And if Khabib does that, if he thinks, I'm going to show this motherfucker, I'm going to beat the crap out of him in one round, because that's what Conor's trying to make you do. He's trying to get you emotional. And then you run at him and you run onto that big left hand, could be a bad night for Khabib. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Thursday, but it's going to be an interesting press conference for sure.
Are you impressed by the way he does that, Mike? I mean, he used to be very good at getting under guys' skin as well, but he just seems to be one of the best. And like you said, not only – it's not just promoting a fight. It's not just creating a show. It, like, actually gets people off their games.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, that's what it's all about. You know, yeah, of course, you're out there and you are putting on a performance to a certain degree. You know, you've got the world watching. There's tons of cameras and press and often a crowd. You know, so you're performing and you're playing up to it a little bit. You're kind of almost an enhanced version of yourself. And you want to be entertaining, but also you do want to send a message to your opponent. You want to exude confidence. You want to remind them of their shortcomings. You want to remind them of when they've been knocked out, all that type of stuff. You want to put that seed of doubt in their mind. And certainly when you square up, you want to let them know, listen, motherfucker, next time I see you in the ring, it's on. I'm coming at you with everything I've got. There's your, you know, this week, the press conference and the weigh-in, that's Conor's last chance to really get in their head. And the old saying is you can win a fight before you even step in the octagon or the ring. And it's so true, you can. You know, if you get in someone's head and you think, shit, man, he looks crazy, or he was big, or, man, he's wild, you know, and then that affects your confidence, and then you don't fully commit to your punches, or you kind of close your eyes as you're throwing a punch because you're like, shit, you know, it can affect the outcome of the fight in a massive way. And that's what Conor's trying to do, and that's what he's very good at.
No doubt. All right, let's talk about the fight inside the cage, you know, the tactics themselves. I mean, of course, largely it's striker versus grappler, right? I mean, that's what their strengths are. But is that too simple of a way to analyze it? I mean, everybody's good at everything these days. Is that too simple of analyzing, or is that what this fight is at its core?
I mean, at its core, I guess. You know, I mean, both guys can grapple, both guys can strike, you know, but Khabib is a way better grappler and Conor's a way better striker. You know, that's fair to say. Khabib's a decent level striker, you know, he is, you know, but he'd be a fool to try and stand toe to toe with McGregor in this fight. That's not the path to victory. We've seen the kryptonite of Irish, English, European generally fighters. The kryptonite is wrestling. You know, we don't wrestle at a high level in the UK, in Ireland, in Europe. You know, we don't have an academic program like you guys do here in America and in Russia. You know, I don't know what their program is, but they're all fucking wrestling maniacs as well. So, I mean, the path to victory is taking down. And, of course, trying to get back to your feet is very tiresome as well. And we've seen Conor get tired in the later rounds. Rounds two or three, he does gas incredibly. And we've seen that time and time again. And that's just, I think that's the way his body's made up. You know, you can't be a sprinter and a marathon runner at the same time. You just can't. It's not possible. Conor's a sprinter, he's very explosive, he's got knockout power. Take him to the later rounds, he kind of struggles. Khabib doesn't. So if you take him down, forces him to try and fight to get back to his feet, and then when he gets back to his feet, just takes him down again. It's going to take the will out of him. But, you know, to do so, he's going to walk through the firing line, he's going to walk through the danger zone to get that body lock, you know. And that's what, you know, and that's it. You know, can he get into the ground? If he can get to the ground, Conor's fucked. If he can't get into the ground, Khabib's fucked. And I know that sounds very crude way of putting it, but that's pretty much the way I see it. And I think that's the way the world sees it.
Yeah, I agree. Where do you feel like, I mean, I had somebody say this analysis the other day, and I thought it was great. It was saying that Conor fighting Khabib is like trying to shoot a bear with a long rifle. You know, if you get it, you're good, but if it gets inside, you know, you got nothing you can do. So I wonder, you know, where do you see Khabib, I guess, as being most vulnerable? Is it just that range of, I mean, trying to get the hands on and moving? Because he doesn't have necessarily the best shot from range. I mean, is that where this fight is won or lost for Conor? And can Conor just sit there and wait and try to time a left, or is that a bad approach?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, as you said, Khabib isn't the type of guy to shoot a double leg from distance, you know, which in MMA doesn't work too well anyway. But still, that's not what Khabib does. You know, he likes to punch his way into a clinch, get the body lock, push up against the fence, and then use trips or whatever from there. But getting in on the inside is going to be the hard part. Conor can knock people out. We've seen that time and time again. But also, we've seen guys like Nate Diaz take his best shots and walk right through them. You know, so you've got to remember that. It's not, you know, yes, he's a very good striker, but, you know, not everybody he hits falls apart, you know. Mm-hmm. And Khabib's 26-0 for a reason. You know, he's fought very, very good fighters. And he's got good stand-up. I mean, people are sleeping on Ally Quinter. Ally Quinter, as you know, he's a very, very good fighter, very accomplished, hard hitting, excellent boxing, and decent wrestling. You know, and people were saying people were criticizing Khabib in that fight, and I was like, are you out of your fucking mind? He still won every single round dominantly, jabbed his face off, and Ally Quinter is very, very tough. You know, so I'm, and the, you know, listen, I don't know. It's hard. I mean, Conor's gonna let. I don't know. I was gonna say Conor's gonna let Khabib come to him, but Conor might want to stalk him, put him on his back foot. It's hard. It's harder to fight on your back foot, but also if you're going forward, you kind of play into the wrestler's hands a little bit because you might, you know, they can shoot in. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, we just don't know what's gonna happen on the night. You know, my prediction is. See, the thing is, I said at the start of these interviews, John, I said my prediction was Conor knocks him out in the first round, headline Madison Square Garden, and fights Nate Diaz with a 165-pound belt, which is a very good possibility. But there's also a very good possibility that Khabib gets him down and beats the shit out of him for three rounds and gets a submission in round four. You know, and I was just about to say that that was my prediction, and then I remembered my prediction at the start of the phone call. So, you know, honestly, I go back and forth all the time, and that's what makes this such a great fight.
Yeah, you know, you're so right, man. It's just such a 50-50 fight. So that's why I was going to ask you is, you know, I know come this weekend you're going to have to make a prediction on air. Are you looking for something? What do you think is going to convince you one way? Because I think you're right, man. It's those two possibilities are so distinct and could happen. So what are you going to be looking for this week? I mean, what's going to sway you, you think, one way or the other, so that you finally come to it and make a call?
Yeah, well, there'll be two big key events. Obviously, the press conference, that'll be interesting to see if Conor gets under his skin. And then also the weigh-in. You know, I mean, I think Conor makes 155 pretty comfortably, way more than what he did 145. We know Khabib's had trouble. You know, a bad wake-up can be the difference between winning or losing a fight, the difference between taking a good punch or that punch knocking you out. So the weigh-in, you know, let's see what how Khabib looks in the morning. Are they doing morning weigh-ins, John?
Yeah.
Still, I think they are,
9
right?
9 a.m., yep, 9 a.m.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll be intrigued to see how Khabib looks in the morning. That might be very telling, you know. So, yeah, I'll make a decision then.
Very nice. Well, other than that, I mean, this is a good card. So give me one selection. I mean, is it as simple as Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis, or is there another fight on the card that your mouth's kind of watering a little bit, can't wait to see that fight?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, yeah. I mean, the next best fight is for sure Pettis and Ferguson. You know, Ferguson's really impressed me the way he's been able to come back so quickly after a terrible knee injury. You know, he should have been back so soon, let alone fighting a guy like Anthony Pettis. Pettis looks incredible against Chiesa. Of course, he was a former champion. You know, the fact he's still fighting guys of this caliber shows that he wants to be champion again. Ferguson, well, for both of them, whoever wins this fight is going to fight the winner of Khabib and Conor. That would be my guess, unless Conor goes up and fights Nate, as I said. But you know, on paper, that should be the way things work out. Which is a lot of motivation for them. Also, it's going to be infuriating for Tony Ferguson. You know, Tony Ferguson, I think he's going to be coming in there with a massive chip on his shoulder, kind of been overlooked, not really mentioned in any of the promotion for this fight. But he was the interim champion. He had the belt wrapped around his waist. So if I was him, I'm fucking fuming. No wonder he's coming back and he wants to do some damage. He wants to make an example of Anthony Pettis and talk some shit on the microphone. You know, so I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see what happens.
There you have it. That was Michael Bisping talking about the fight. You know, interesting to hear kind of the way he was looking at things and how he was looking to see how things played out. And the fact, I love that Mike even said his pick was changing, because I have stayed consistent with my Khabib Nurmagomedov pick. That was my pick going into this week. I've stayed consistent with it. But Cole Coffey, I'm not going to lie, man. Conor's a dangerous man, dude.
That's right.
And just seeing that confidence again up close. It's been, you know, it's been a year since we've, you know, been captivated by his eloquence, since we've seen his physical talents up close. And I'm sticking with my Khabib pick, but I'm nervous, man. Conor's a dangerous man.
He is. And you know, like, I don't know, something about the swagger that he came in today felt better. Like, even at the open workout, the swagger came better.
It felt more genuine today, I
thought.
Today,
the swagger was there.
Yeah, we didn't have the fur coat on and the billionaire strut and the over-the-top. Today was just the confidence of a man that owns that swagger.
Like, it felt better. Like, I felt Well, I mean, one, I was going to stick with my pick. I, on the opposite hand, pick Connor, but I felt better with what I saw today. Like I said, at the open workout, I was like, maybe not as, you know, into my pick, but today, I just in the swagger. I didn't even see him work out today, but something about the swagger was like, okay, you did right. I picked right.
I agree.
His self-belief is so strong that it's contagious. You're like, all right, yeah, I made the right pick.
I agree. I liked his attitude and demeanor way more today than I did in New York.
Yeah.
Way more.
It was cool. But there was something, that was really cool yesterday when he was when he came on and gave everybody the scare that he was going to leave, was when his young son came
up. Because he walked out, to
up.
Explain that, Casey, anybody doesn't know. He walked out for the open workouts, went to the center of the stage, waved at the crowd, and then did a U-turn and walked out. And we were like, holy shit, is he done?
That sucks. But it was cool. So he went over and gave an interview, but at that time his son came and walked around. But at the end, when Connor finished his interview, when he picked up his son and then brought him over and kind of paraded him around, his whole attitude and aura around him changed. You know, he seemed like the happy, proud father, which was really cool. And then he came back recharged. And ever since then, I feel like, you know, that he's just building momentum. And then seeing him today with the swagger, with everything going on, I feel good about my picks, you know. And being, you know, so at the top of, you know, the staff picks, you know, I feel that my gut intuition,
normally I would check you on your trash talk, man. I would, but hey, you were standing at the top of the charts
of the charts.
MMA Junkie staff picks.
Yeah, I feel like we should, maybe I'll go on record and say I homered for a pick this time, which might make me lose my position at the top.
Are we just going to leave it at that and let people decipher as they will?
See who they think I picked?
Yeah.
Or should I just say who it is? I don't know. Maybe I may would leave it like that.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I homered on one of my picks. Me and Dan Tom, we go at it, man. Like, he's the only one I really pay attention because we're close.
So now I'm checking you on your trash talk. All right. You got the first part. You got the brag about being on top.
I think the nearest one is like three. I think Ben's the closest. He's three behind us.
Right.
So when you think about that, I could go 3-for-3 on a 6-pick night and still hold on to the spot if it wasn't for Dan. But like Dan, I make one wrong decision in this one, and he's back on.
It's tense.
I'm like, oh.
It's tense.
It's cool. But now I'm just like, let's get this year over, man. I'm like, shit, I might end up on the top. Even if I finish, I think, in the top five of staff, I'll feel pretty
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
You know, just for the fact of, like,
bad for
we've been fighting to get on the staff picks and nobody would let us in. Well, not that you didn't let us, it just we never got
around. Nobody ever asked
you
and Abby as videographers to be on the staff picks.
We want to be on the picks, you know, and then when we came on, and Abby's had a resurgence as well. I had a rough start of the year and he had a rough start, and then mine just picked back up. I had a couple good undefeated nights or whatever that kind of got me up there a little bit. So should be good, though. I mean, it certainly, you know, but even like with like DraftKings or something, when you have something kind of pushing you forward, you're a little bit more into the fight.
Just
you're
a few bucks. I'm telling you, man. And listen, I'm not a big gambler, even though I live out here in Las Vegas. And I will say, like I said, I don't do this anymore. I don't gamble on fights anymore because I'm telling you, it skews the way I look at it. But that just goes to show you how much fun it is. Yeah. Literally, put $1 on every fight. $1.
Right.
That will make you more interested.
Totally interested into it.
I know, as ridiculous as that sounds,
yep,
you're just like, now you got a vested interest in a fight, you know?
Yep.
It's not just, I'm kind of watching, I'm interested to see what happens. Like, you have $1 on it, you're like, come on, my man.
But you'll also, but you're right, though. I've had, like, in the past, I think I had, like, a $2 parlay on, like, an 8-pick. And it got down to, I forget what fight it was, but it was, like, Evan Dunham against somebody. And I picked Dunham to lose.
Right.
And he got the upset win, and it was awesome. It was like one of those two or three fights ago. And I remember during the whole time, I was so mad. I was like, no, Evan, what are you doing? No, you're not supposed to win. And I was, you know, and I realized, I checked myself. I was like, dude, Evan's like the nicest dude. You can't be upset that he actually won because he busted your 18 parlay. But, dude, it was like, I forget what it was. I was going to make like $1,000. On a $2 fucking parlay.
Jeez.
And that's because I had a bunch of underdogs, and then it didn't work out. So.
Evan Dunham blew it for you.
Yeah, but I was like, fuck it. I'm not mad. I'm not
He's
mad at him.
He's a good dude.
But you're right. It can skew
It does. I feel like you start saying like
you start judging rounds differently
exactly.
in your mind. Completely.
Was that a bad decision? No, it wasn't a bad decision. Yeah. You were looking at it wrong.
That was
bro.
An early stoppage.
Yeah.
I mean, he was completely flat and his arms were done, but I mean, like early stoppage.
his right eye fluttered a little bit. He was coming back. I should say, by the way, Mike Bond and Steve Morocco are out here as well. Of course, Mike Bond has been with us all week. You've probably seen him on camera with me doing some stuff. And then Steven actually just got in this morning. He's part of a top secret project.
Oh yes.
Can't really talk about that right now. But yeah. He's good. So he'll be around. He'll be
the
around during weigh-ins. He'll be around on the Magnificent One. He'll be around on Fight Night as well. I was with him last week in San Jose, and I will say, by the way, he briefly locked me out of the house.
Shut up.
Swear
again?
To God. Long time listeners of the MMA Roadshow will know
my God.
That Steven Morocco is the cause of one of Cold Coffee's most stressful nights ever in Australia, I believe, for the Rousey home fight,
I
right?
I think it was.
And and we got locked out by Steven Morocco, who does sleep with not earbuds. What would you call them? Earbuds.
Noise canceling.
Noise canceling. Yeah. So he
like over the ear motherfuckers.
So he sleeps with those, and he locked us out of the apartment for quite some time.
Locked a deadbolt that we hadn't used all week. Just decided to lock the deadbolt. We didn't have keys.
It's kind of foggy, but I believe he locked us out. You weren't there for this one, but I believe he locked us out in Scotland as well.
I believe that. Yeah. Because isn't that and wasn't there another time that. Somebody had to scale a building.
Oh, yes. That was in –
And that was him again, too,
that was
wasn't
him
it?
Again. Steven locked
Dude,
us out.
He is so
that was in
bad.
Baltimore. That was in Baltimore.
He is so bad.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so it briefly happened. Let me see if I can pull up my text. Because I went to dinner, and I came back. And I even left before – I joked before I left the Airbnb we're at. I'm like, don't touch the door, dude. I was like, I'm locking it on my way out. And he did for some reason anyway. And I got home, and it was 2 a.m., and I just – I knocked on the door. It was locked, you know, and I just texted, bro. I didn't know what to say at that point. And so I tried to walk around to the side of the house where his window was, the sprinklers had been running, so it was, like, muddy. And so I'm walking through mud, and then there's a gate locked, and so I can't get to the window where he is. So I'm like, what am I going to do? So I ended up just – I slammed on the door. It was like one of those aluminum doors, you know, and just like slammed on it like 3 or 4 times really hard. And like, thank God, I guess like maybe he had to go pee or something, but he woke up and he was like, he came to let me in. And so I was only locked out for about 2 minutes, but it could have easily been 2 hours had he not needed to go pee or whatever.
Wow.
And yeah, I was like, he's like, bro, how long have you been out here? I'm like, it's cool. Go back to bed. I'm okay. I don't want to talk about it right now. Like, it wasn't that long. So, yeah.
That's why you don't Airbnb with Steven.
So now
he's the magnificent door locker.
He has locked me out of our Airbnb in 3 different countries.
Wow.
That's a record. All right, let's talk about the rest of this card real quick. Tony Ferguson versus Anthony Pettis. I love this fight, man. I really do love this fight. I think it's going to be a tremendous fight. Both guys look to be in top form. I am a little worried about Tony Ferguson's knee. I know that he's going out of his way to tell us that we have no reason to worry about it. But, you know, when doctors tell you it's going to be a year and you come back in 5 months, I praise the hell out of you. And I know he worked his ass off to get here, so I'm not knocking him. But you just want to – I mean, he can't – you don't know exactly what's happening inside your body with the fusion of ligaments and things of that nature. So it worries me a little bit. He doesn't worry me. I know his will and I know his dedication is second to none in this sport. But I'm excited for him. And Anthony Pettis seems to be back in that proper mental state, man. He has all the physical tools.
Yep.
But I always felt like it was just kind of a mental thing sometimes about where he needed to be or whatever. I feel like he's in the right spot at this point. And I do believe this is a pretty fantastic fight.
It should be fantastic. Tony is he's been in wacky spirits all week, but he's certainly is in good spirits. But you're right. I mean, when you think about it, you know, the doctors say it's going to take a year. Maybe they don't realize that his focus or his determination, you know, what he's able to push himself through. But you also run into wonder, it's one point to rush it to where you can actually walk on it and you're actually mobile on it and that you're able to move. And then once you start pushing, you figure out, oh, hey, I can kick. I can bounce. I can jump. Should you kick?
Right.
Should you bounce? Maybe that's the difference, you know, where, you know, he's physically able to do what he needs to do, but should he really be doing it? You know, is it going to slow the overall process? I mean, sometimes, you know, like I said, you know, maybe as the body's recovering, a certain period needs to happen just for the cells needed to grow, maybe. Maybe there's just time that needs, you know, sure, you're able to function, you're able to walk, but, you know, I mean, hate to think that it's just like borrowed time before the doctors, you know, something happens, the doctors say, that's why we told you, whatever. But he looked great. He moved around. He had great flexibility.
Fun workout.
Fun dance moves. I mean, he's got it, you know. So,
he's not a fan of Chapman Can-Do. You know, he's called him out a couple
Chapman
times.
Chapman Can-Do.
I will say this. Tony Ferguson's demeanor, I think he has a right to be angry right now, right? I mean, here he is, an interim champion, right? Has his belt taken away from him.
Yeah,
and then is now fighting on the same card where the title is being contested. You know what I mean? So I believe he has every right to be angry. It's just the hard part I was trying to understand this week is like, well, you know, is he angry at the media? Like, what did we do? I don't think anybody – I don't remember anybody ever putting him down or questioning him or –
I felt
praising him.
Maybe people didn't cause a big enough ruckus when his belt was taken and maybe took a slight
that might
to the
fair.
Fact of like, why didn't y'all – you know, y'all wrote me off. Y'all let him take my belt. You stop talking to me. You stop whatever. Now you're just thinking my legs – This. I don't know, but
that's,
I mean,
that would be fair. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It was just like, bro, you know what they're doing. It's. I mean, once Connor, right. I guess that's is. I'm trained to the fact now that once Connor's involved, you just throw all rules out the window. You throw all reality out
but
the
even,
window. You
even
know?
Not even just him. I mean, like, you know, when it came with like, you know, Colby. Sorry, you have this interim belt. Sorry, got to go. You know. Oh, hey, Daniel, you haven't had a chance to. Defend this thing. I know you just got the heavyweight belt, but hey, shit's got to move. We're going to take this belt from you. You know, it's just, I don't know. I think even just the way that they're doing shit, I think maybe more fighters are like, why aren't you guys like calling the UFC on their bullshit? You know, instead of just like us saying, well, of course, that's business. Business has got to keep going. You know, we take it like, oh, hey, that's fine. Where maybe we should be like, hey, UFC, that's kind of fucked up. You know, you guys build these belts up like they're something like, when is enough enough? You know, why you're getting through this point of, oh, what has to have a pay-per-view? We have to have a title.
Right.
Okay, so we create this interim title, and then you immediately take it away. Then you're just a slap in all of our face for saying, why the fuck should we care for the pay-per-view? Just because you put a title, you wanted to put this interim title on because you thought that's what we wanted, but then you take it away immediately after for some other BS. I don't know. It's just weird. So, I mean, I could see where maybe some fighters are like, why aren't you guys calling the UFC on their bullshit? And maybe we should.
It's fair.
I mean,
argument.
We towed the line. I mean, like, we're like, hey, this is just what it is. And, I mean, like, you can only ask it so many times before they say, all right, well, it's just what was needed. And you ask it again. They're like, we just answered it. It was just what was needed. And we kind of move on. But that's easy for us on the outside to move on because we didn't just bust our ass. We didn't just sweat, blood, and tears
have
to earn
this
thing.
Have our goal taken away from
and
us.
And then to have what your goal
is.
You know,
as he said, a few zeros off his paycheck.
That's huge. That's fucking ridiculous.
Good point.
You know, like the dude did not lose the title, and you're going to strip him and then take away.
If he'd have sat there and yelled at us and said that, I would have just been like,
You're right, bro.
You know what I mean? I just felt it was some other kind of weird attack, and I didn't take it personally. It didn't offend me. I mean, dude, what these guys put themselves through, if they blow up on us every now and then, no big deal, man. It is what it is. I just didn't necessarily understand the message, which is if anybody watched that scrum that we had with them, that's why even at the end I asked, you know, like, where's this anger coming from? Like, who's it directed at? And you know, he said, oh, I'm not angry. I don't have a chip on my shoulder, But you know what, man? You make a compelling argument, man. I can't argue with that. Well, this is going to be a phenomenal fight. And if Tony Ferguson wins, man, he deserves to be against the winner of Khabib and Conor. No question about it. No disrespect to Dustin and Nate coming up. Sounds like that fight's still going to happen. But I think you got to go with Tony Ferguson if he's victorious. And I know that if it ends up being Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov both victorious, I know people are going to say that bout's cursed. But you got to try again. You got to try again. Dominic Reyes, Vince St. Preux. I like this fight. I'm having a hard time gauging it, man. Dominic Reyes, dangerous, dangerous, man. Yeah. He is coming in and living up to his name. Well, he was supposed to be the Dominator. I guess he's the Destroyer now. So, whatever. He's living up to both of them.
He's doing both.
He's doing fantastic. You know, three results, all three in the first round. So, we haven't had a ton of tape to watch. But what tape we have, I've been impressed with. You know, I feel like he's shown a lot of skills in those fights. Meanwhile, Vince Pru, who I think you and I both admit, I have a hard time getting a feel on OSP, man. It's just... He's not flashy. He's not spectacular. He doesn't do anything where you're just like, man, that is the best X in the division, or that's the best Y in the division.
It's the best Von Prucho.
Well, there you go. He does have that. Good call there. He's got the best in the game. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, I have a hard time gauging him, and I feel like every time I think he's going to lose, he wins. And every time I think he's going to win, he loses.
Yeah.
So I did take Dominic Reyes in this fight. But I think this is an intriguing matchup because Dominic Reyes looks like a next-generation guy. But can he get past OSP? That's a big question.
Yeah. And I did take Reyes as well. And I've taken OSP in the past. And it's been for my favorite. And I've also bet against him. And he's proved me wrong. He's one of those guys that's just so hard to sort of pick because you just don't know what's going to show up. Because there's times he gets out there and the striking looks great. And there's other times when it's like he's just in a rush to get the fight down to the ground. Yeah. And when that doesn't happen for him and he
gets
starts
sloppy with it.
Yeah, and he starts absorbing strikes, you know, then the fight tends to go the opposite way. It goes down for him pretty quickly. I just think with Reyes, his hands are so strong. He's so powerful. And I just feel that he's on the upwards right now. He's riding a high momentum that I think right now, with just the striking, I think he's going to be able to keep the distance from OSP, not let OSP get him down the ground, not let to get him. And I think that the strikes is what's going to do it for him. I think he's going to be able to I'm guessing probably a TKO, KO.
If Dominic wins this, man, you got to pay attention. If you haven't been watching him on the rise, you got to pay attention. Derek Lewis versus Alexander Volkov, another fantastic fight there as well. Heavyweight fight. Man, we saw the face-off today, or yesterday, I guess. No, it was earlier. God damn, it's been a long day. Earlier today, Volkov is just a big, tall man. I mean, he's going to tower over anybody, but definitely towered over Derek Lewis. Derek, no question, a roadshow favorite. Of course, man, always want good things for him. This is a tough fight, and it is a fight, you know, especially for Volkov, I think, that, you know, is a number one contender type fight. But, you know, if Derek Lewis can pick up a win here, he still remains incredibly relevant in the top of that division. Now, there's no rush to name a number one contender right now because we got Cormier on hold. You know, he's injured right now. We got the Lesnar fight up next, it would seem. So there's not a big rush, but, you know, there's an importance to remain at the top and stay close to that because Cormier's not going to be around much longer, right? Yep. I mean, he's going to hang it up pretty soon. Verdum got the suspension. That takes out a top name up there. So,
yeah.
Important stuff going on. I think this is a big fight that, I mean, maybe isn't – I wouldn't say not getting the attention it deserves, but maybe just people aren't necessarily recognizing how relevant, you know, with Derek coming off kind of a not-so-fantastic performance, we'll say, and with Volkov kind of flying under the radar so far in his UFC career, you know, I think maybe people aren't realizing how important this matchup is in the division.
I agree. Like, when I look at this fight, I mean, it just screams, like, contender fight for me. Like, either one of these guys could get the nod in the next fight. You know, when the fight was going to Moscow, you know, thought like, oh, shit, you know, Volkov could get the nod to be the main event in it. You know, he's definitely, his star power has risen. Derek has huge star power. People love him. And I think this is number two. What, number two, number five? I mean, that's about as good as it gets.
Yep.
You know, we saw, you know, granted, the fight with Francis was not a great fight for Francis in that fight with Derek. But, you know, you got Volkov right behind him. So in that sense, you know, you could almost move him up above Francis because, you know, Francis dropped a little bit. But to me, in my mind, this is the number one contender fight, that the winner of this fight should be the next guy that, you know, barring some other crazy shit and people aren't able to fight, these guys should be the ones that to do it. So I'm hoping Derek's back works out good. I mean, I know when we were doing the media day the other day at the PI, he was there just getting his back looked at, getting treatments, you know, so he's trying to do what he needs to do to keep his back loose, I imagine, just stay stretched out and stay good for the fight week so that he's not going to overtrain himself, hopefully, to where his back is affecting him so that he's not going in the fight already diminished. You know, it's one thing if, you know, throughout the fight, you know, some strain causes something. And then as the rounds go on, we would see that kind of, you know, capitulate into something bigger. But I'm hoping he goes in there and he's looking good. I mean, Krubov says his striking looks good. He's a great coach. I mean, and you see Derek, when you see him and he's on point, his strikes are just vicious. And training, it's scary watching him hit the mitts. And then just something seems to happen when it gets in the...
Because I think most of his performance issues are centered around that back.
The back,
you know,
right?
What I mean? And when his back's not right, he can't do what he does.
Yeah.
And that's twofold. It's number one, throwing with the type of power that is so scary.
Right.
And number two, doing the cardio that it takes to be in the proper shape to be able to last. And
that's true.
And I think the back, you're right, man. That's what has to hold up, man. That's the center of everything for him.
Yeah, man. I hope so. I hope this whole week, if that's the case, I hope this whole week is just relaxing the back, getting the nice treatments at the PI. You know, I was going to say working on the weight cut, but, you know, he doesn't have much to do on that.
It's not too bad
for him. You know, so, yeah, I want this to be a good fight. I mean, I want to see hands go. Volkov has proved that he can take a punch. I would like to see him try to take the best of Derek. But he's got such long limbs and such
tough
long arms that if he uses the distance, Derek won't be he won't get a chance to get in close.
Derek has to just push through it, man. I think.
He would have to almost just bull rush, get through the initial ones, get your hands on him, get up against the cage, get some dirty elbows in there, some dirty boxing, and then get him down to the ground. Watch out for the long limbs. Watch out for the submission, but get that ground and pound, you know, and I think he can get it.
Be big. Felice Herrig and Michelle Waterson kick off the pay-per-view. I love this fight, too, and it's kind of funny that they haven't fought yet. You know, they've been in different weight classes at times throughout their career. They've been in different promotions at times throughout their career, but they've both been around for a long time. I mean, they're both pioneers in a way of the women's division, not the early days. I mean, there's a generation before them as well, but as far as this thing has evolved, you know, they've been around to see it happen. They were supposed to fight at one time before, and this is a big fight in that division as well. And I think it's a great way to kick off the main card. The preliminary card is phenomenal as well, man. I really do think there's a lot of interesting fights on here. You know, you and I we're kind of fight junkies, man. I understand everybody's paying attention to Conor and Habib and the bigger names here, but Jussier Formiga, who for me is a guy that I've always been interested in. You know, I got to call some of his fights in Tachi Palace, so, you know, before he was in the UFC and on the regional scene, I got to see how dangerous he was with that incredible jiu-jitsu he has. I mean, if he gets to your back, you are in a lot of trouble. Meanwhile, Sergio Pettis, a guy that was a prospect label forever, but this seems to really be putting things together, man, and really coming into his own. I mean, he was the kid for a long time, and I think I don't say got rushed to the UFC, but that Pettis name came with a lot of expectations on it, you know, and I think it was hard for him to live up to that, you know, unless you're, you know, just the highest level talent of all time, you're going to have your struggles as you grow. And I think it was tough for him. So I really, really love that matchup. I also really love Tonya Evinger versus Aspen Ladd. You know, Tonya, the grizzled veteran, so to speak, definitely another, veteran and pioneer of the women's game, versus Aspen Ladd, who's kind of that up-and-coming talent, starting to get a little swagger about her as well. She had that, you know, weird situation with Leslie Smith earlier this year. So those are the two that really stand out to me on the FX portion. But we got Jalen Turner coming up there against Vicente Luque, which could be a fun fight. Jalen stepping in on short notice. And, then, of course, Scott Holtzman, a guy that we always like, man, always a friendly, cool dude, against Alan Patrick, who would be part of – it will give a nod to our man, Matty Radmanovich, who is no longer with the UFC. He used to have a squad that he termed the John Lineker All-Stars, which would be the guys with English-sounding names that are actually foreign. Alan Patrick. You would definitely not expect to be a Portuguese dude that doesn't speak a lick of English. But tell me about those FX prelims, man. What stands out to you there?
Well, let me pull the card up.
Oh, jeez. I just went through the thing. You should have been writing it down.
No, I was... Bonbon's over here asking me about some of the footage from the Khabib one.
Oh, good Lord!
Instagram. I know, and I was telling him, "Hold on, we're taping." And then you tossed.
And then
it
I called
me.
You out.
I know, right when I was trying.
Well, I should say, before this mishap happened,
FS1 prelims?
FX. Before this mishap happened, I was going to say, if you were liking this flawlessly executed podcast between two professionals of the sport.
Super professional.
You should log into iTunes. You should take a second to rate us right there. Leave us a review. I always like a little feedback. Positive. I mean, you can throw some negative in there if you want. Put some positive affirmation for two nice guys putting out free content for you. That always feels good. A little pat on the back
never
hurts.
We never make mistakes.
But then we kind of the wheels fell off, but we'll blame it on Mike Bond. I mean,
I'm blaming it on Bon Bon. He shouldn't be texting me at this point in the night. Almost 11, but I mean, it popped up. What made me think, since we're always so flawless, what did you say the nickname was for Dominic Reyes?
It was supposed to be the Dominator, but he says he has a lot of respect for Dominic Cruz, so he changed it to – it's not the Destroyer, is it?
What is it? It's the Devastator.
The Devastator. I knew it was something like that.
See, because there, I had to take the other wheel off. My wheel fell off over here. I'm just
taking
the wheel
off. Why you
gotta
call me out?
Because somebody would be like, "Hey, mother, he said this, this, this." So there, it is the Devastator.
Do you have a fight on the FX prelims that you're most looking forward to, sir? Or maybe any inside nuggets of notes and wisdom that you ran across this week as you were doing interviews or other such? You know, that's the concept of this. It's the MMA Roadshow. We give people behind the scenes notes, things that we've seen.
I'm looking for the – well, it's funny. I'm looking at the Aspen Ladd and the Tonya Evinger fight.
I like that
I'm
a lot.
Really liking, you know, like it legitimate – and it popped again in my head when you were talking about, you know, pioneers of the sport.
Right.
You know, Tonya's been doing this for like 11 years, you know, and Aspen's first amateur fight was like 2013.
That's crazy.
It is – Tonya's been doing this for so long that when you said like there's this whole other generation or whatever that's been going, that was what part Tonya was. Tonya was in there. So it's interesting to see, because Aspen's always been super, super tough. But when it comes to toughness, like it's hard to find one that's tougher than Evinger. I mean, she took a lot of punishment from Cyborg, but she's also strong. She just comes forward. And I'd be willing to see if Aspen, you know, on her way up, is ready for someone that fights like Tonya. She believes she is. We tried to kind of get her to talk a little bit and give a little strategy in the fight, but she was like, "You're just gonna have to wait."
Aspen's
just
fun.
I like
Aspen a lot. She's young. She's got a lot of confidence. And she's very short in her interviews. You have to be ready. She doesn't talk a lot. But I like it. I like the air about her. I like the confidence that she had. She's one that absolutely believes in herself. We talk about that all the time. False confidence versus real confidence. She has it, but she's not going to get up and just wow you on the microphone.
That's true. That's true. And the other one I was going to say is Hot Sauce.
I'm
interested
Scott
for the Hot Sauce fight, so that should be a good one.
I like it. Kicks off on Fight Pass, Yana Kuniskaya versus Lena Landsberg. And then, which is a big fight in the women's division, no question about it. We had a chance to talk to Yana Kuniskaya earlier this week. It's actually a couple weeks ago at the PI, which was fun to sit down with her. And then I actually saw Lena Landsberg yesterday at the Performance Institute. Nick Lentz versus Gray Maynard.
That's great.
I love this fight, and I love Gray. You know, obviously an Extreme Couture guy forever and ever, but I love Nick Lentz as well. And this is a big fight at lightweight, but it may seem funny that the audio that I wanted to share this week is from the early Fight Pass prelims, but we had a chance to talk to Nick Lentz today.
Yep.
And, you know, first of all, just walking up to Nick Lentz and seeing the smile on his face and seeing the mood that he was in was good to see, because, you know, in all the years that we've had of interviewing Nick Lentz and talking to him, you know, there's sometimes you could tell that he was just uncomfortable. And it's like it's not that he didn't like you.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was like, you know, you just talked to him and it was cool. Then as soon as you turn the camera on and you start getting into kind of interview mode, you could tell he was uncomfortable. You know, today it was like smiling, embracing. And we had a chance to talk and it got deep for a little bit, man. He kind of shared some emotions. And, you know, I think he was fighting back tears for a second, and understandably so. And you'll understand in a minute when you listen. So, yes, I know this is an early prelim, and you know, it's on the week of a massive, massive fight with Khabib versus Conor McGregor. But, you know, I think when somebody kind of bears themselves to you and brings it to your reel like this, you guys deserve to hear it. Because, you know, I don't know that Nick Lentz is the most understood cat of all times.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a phenomenal interview. So here's Nick Lentz.
All right, Nick. Well, we know anytime you step in the cage, it's going to be a scrap. But you've had some mixed results lately. So give us the idea, the professional assessment. Where does your game stand right now?
My game is better than ever right now. You know, I mean, something really clicked after my last fight. I don't think it had anything to do with losing. You know, as far as I'm concerned, that was one of the shadiest, weirdest fights I've ever had to deal with. You know, I was fighting two men in there, and it was pretty messed up. You know, it was not the best way. But look where I am now. You know, I haven't gone any. Have I gone downhill? No, I'm on the biggest card there's ever going to be.
Yeah.
So I'm doing just fine in life, and my career is on the up. And I've talked to you guys in the past, and there was times in my career where I went on insane winning streaks, and it didn't get me anywhere. And so there's a lot more to fighting than doing what you used to do in the past. You know, there's all kinds of things. You got to be more personal, but you got to do these things. And I was talking earlier with Helwani, and I said, you know, when I came in the UFC and I was 25 years old, I was in no way prepared for any of it. I wasn't prepared in the physical part. I wasn't prepared in the mental part. I wasn't prepared in the media part. I wasn't prepared for anything. And I just, through sheer willpower, am still here. And now I actually have the skills and the talent and everything else to put it to work. And so I'm very happy with how I'm going. And you guys will see. I was just going to swear a lot, but I'm going to smash Gray Maynard. I'm going to smash him.
It's interesting to hear this kind of development of you kind of as the whole package. I mean, are you enjoying it? Because you did always strike me as a guy that's like, listen, leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you. I just want to go in, do my job, punch in and punch out. So, I mean, are you doing this begrudgingly or do you kind of enjoy embracing this new persona?
No, I enjoy it. That's what I say. I'm enjoying life now. You know, before it was more of a job. It was more stressful. You put the camera in front of me, it was a stressful thing. You know, I constantly have to deal with people critiquing you and stuff. And I wasn't prepared for that. You know, and like I came from like the bottom of society, you know, and like as poor as you can be, as not prepared as you can be, and when you climb up the ladder and all of a sudden people are sticking microphones in your faces and then like confronting you all the time, you're like whoa, like you guys don't know shit about me, and yet you guys all have opinions and everything, and I'm out here working my ass off, and you don't like it or you do like it or whatever. But now I have my kids, I have my wife, I'm successful in life, I'm successful in other avenues and business and stuff, and now everything is coming together. And trust me, I got a lot of years left, and you're going to be surprised. You're going to be surprised.
How much do you credit this change of philosophy to your kids? Because it seems like every time I see you on social media and stuff, you're like, man, I'm loving life. Do you think that's a big part of that?
Yeah, you know, one of the downfalls of my career and in my life is we lost our first kid. So that really set me back years in my life, you know, and that's all I ever wanted to be was a dad. And we tried for like a long time, and we just couldn't get any kids, and now I have to. And now, you know, now we have to be careful. Like every time, like I have multiple freaking alarms on my phone that tell my wife to take the damn birth control pill. Because I just can't pop out another kid right now. Like I can't take it. So no, I'm good. And my kids are the best thing ever. I love them. I take them with me everywhere. You know, they come to the gym, they come in, I'm with them 24 hours a day, so it's the best thing ever. I miss them right now, but, you know, now it's time to do work, and I got mouths to feed.
No doubt. Talk about this matchup with Gray. I mean, you say you're going to smash him. Was it a fight, though, that excited you, I wonder? Because he's a guy that's challenged for a title, been around for a long time, so was this a name when you got it that you got fired up for?
Yeah, it excited me a lot. You know, it caught me off guard at first, because I was going to actually text Sean that day and be like, hey, man, you know, I sent all these cards and I haven't heard from you. And I look at my phone right before I'm going to text him. He texts me and said, Gray Maynard. It's like, I really hope he doesn't want me to go to 45 because that shit ain't happening. I was ecstatic about it. I was very happy. You know, I texted him right back and said, you know, you don't even got to ask me. You know? Of course, I'm on the biggest card of the ever, maybe. You know, everything in life is good like that. And you know, when you do the right things in life, you're like, sometimes you think you're never going to get there. You know, you think you get fucked everywhere you go, but if you just keep doing the right things, you know, stuff starts to work out.
Nice, nice. Well, this would be a big moment for you for sure. Get back in the win column over name, as you said, on the biggest card of the year. What's the goals right now? Give us the professional goals. I mean, are you focused on championship runs? Are there names? What's the goal for you professionally?
Well, it's not championship runs, it's not any of these things. It's just to continue streaming together high quality fights, exciting, entertaining, and giving the whole package, because I can do that. And before I couldn't. Before I could just win fights. That's it. You know, and sometimes they weren't pretty, sometimes they were, sometimes they sucked, sometimes they were fun, you know, but I could win fights. But now I can give you the whole package. And I seem to be reversing the other way as far as age goes. So, I mean, I'm 34, but trust me, I got a long-ass time in this sport.
All right, so there, the Kearney, Nick Lentz. I'm torn on this one.
You got his nickname right.
Come on, get out of here. I didn't get most of them right.
I'm just kidding.
No, Nick Lentz, man. I listen. I thought
that was great.
It was great to see the mood that he was in. Again, touched on that emotion of that his family had gone through. You know, and a lot of people have been through that.
Yeah.
It's not fun. And to talk about where he is now was fantastic. And listen, his just kind of understanding of the game and what it is.
Right.
You know, listen, I can win all day long, and that ain't it. You know, I got to be the whole package, and I feel like I am the whole package now, and I'm ready. I thought that was cool. I'm torn because, you know, Gray Maynard, I love Gray Maynard, man. Like I said, long-time Extreme Couture guy. You know, follow the high points of his career, the low points of his career. I know this is an early Fight Pass prelim, but I'm dialed in for this one.
This is going to be a great fight. I think this is one of those fights. If it plays out how I imagine it could, with these guys just going in there and literally rock'em sock'em mode, this fight could probably steal a lot of thunder from a lot of the other fights as being one of the, like, probably the best fights of the night, which is great because it's very early on in the card. So
set that tone.
Yeah, man, it could be great. But you're right. I mean, it's funny, like, just seeing Nick now from what Nick was two, three years ago, you know, his openness, you know. I mean, you definitely have a good rapport with him. We walked over, and yeah, he lit up, man. He was in good spirits. But even the interview in front of us, he was doing a great job. He embraces it. He knows himself. You know, he's not shy or embarrassed about things. He embraces his faults. And I think once you can embrace your faults and the way you are about this and that, and you have a good, strong sense of self, you're just throwing it out there, and you don't care. And it seemed like he was sure of himself. He knew himself, and he knew what he wants, and he knows what his goals, and he knows where his faults are, and he's just good with it, you know, and in turn was very open, and we never thought we'd get some of the stuff, and some of the stuff he said I had no idea about.
I didn't either.
You know, so that was great. But no, I love talking to that dude, and it's hard to not want to pull or pick for somebody. Gray's always been great too, but after Nick's interview today, I was just like, fuck, I got a homer for him for this one, you know. So
even against your Las Vegas brethren in Gray Maynard,
yeah.
Man. And then that leads to another interview, which is funny. Again, we're focusing on the early Fight Pass prelims, but had a chance to talk to Tony Martin as well. And Tony Martin, you know, quietly, he's flown under the radar. He kind of admits his career started off in a not-so-exciting manner, but he feels like he's made rapid improvements. He's now in the welterweight division. But I had to share this audio with you because man, he just lays it out there, and I'll just leave it at that. But he drops a couple lines in here that are pretty damn open and honest, and potentially revealing and pretty funny. It's not a long interview, and Tony keeps it real. So I thought you might want to hear that too.
Well, I know you had the setback not too long ago, but 4-1 your last five. That's a nice little run, man. What do you feel like the key is to your success right now?
I just think that physically and mentally, I'm at the strongest I've ever been, and I just think that the move up to 170. It's just going to be a dramatic change in my whole career. I think that not having to focus on my weight cut is going to be the difference between, you know, an up-and-comer and a true contender. I think that mentally, it was so draining getting down to 55, especially with that Aubin Mercer fight where I took it on 5 weeks' notice. Is, you know, more than I look back on it, I'm like, oh, I regret the decision to take a 5 weeks' notice when I was 195 pounds, you know. And, but it's also a blessing in disguise because it forced me to go to 170. You know, you think about one judge sees it different, and I'm still fighting at 55, killing myself, feeling like crap, hating life. So I really think that at the end of the, you know, when my career is said and done, I think that that fight is going to be the really changing the trajectory of my career. And I think I should have moved up to 70 a while ago. And I think the best of me is yet to come still.
It's interesting because I feel like it's not a huge trend yet, but I feel like you are part of kind of this growing group of guys that's realizing this weight cut is not good. What does it take for you to get there and to accept that, you know, no, I can compete with these guys at 170?
Yeah, well, honestly, what happened was when I first came in the UFC, I had no martial arts background. I was 3 years in the training, and I just, my skill set wasn't at like a high level yet. So I was like, I needed that weight advantage. Okay, so I was like, I need to cut this extra weight. I want to be the bigger man to try to wear on these guys and get the advantage I can. And now my skill set, I feel like, is an elite level. And I think that that's why the move up to 170 made sense, is where, you know, I also have a long frame, so I'm not going to get in there and have a reach disadvantage or a size disadvantage. They may be a little heavier than me, but I think my skill set is at a high level now, and I think that now is the time to make that move up.
Very nice. Talk about the matchup that you got here with Ryan. What when you got the name, what was your initial thought? Did you like it? What was your feel?
Well, actually, I kind of knew that I was going to fight him right away, is what I heard, was that was the fight they wanted. For some reason, you know, Sean thinks that we're like the two most boring fighters in the UFC. This is what I heard. This is a true story. This isn't a joke. He's like, nah, these guys are, you know, the two most boring fighters, and pretty much he's going to try to weed us out, so the loser's done, you know. I talked to Ryan a little bit, too. I think this is his last fight on his contract, so I don't know if they're probably going to re-sign him anyways. And really, I think I don't know what it is. So I got to go out there. I got to have a hell of a performance. And I wanted to fight right away. I didn't want to wait on the sidelines this long. This was way too long of a layoff. Especially, I was like, you know, I moved up to 70 to be active, to build momentum and to keep fighting. So this 5-6 months kind of sucked waiting on the sidelines. And I was begging the UFC for fights, you know. And honestly, I think Sean don't like me. You know, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know. I think we need to have like a grappling, have like a little grappling match or something. Just like
work it out.
You know, just work it out a little bit. You know, get through the kinks, and try to figure out what's going on. But really, you know, I do have the biggest opportunity. You know, just being on the biggest card, where yes, we're the first fight of the night, but there's still gonna be more eyes on this card. You know, a lot more media press on this card. So this is my opportunity to really seize this opportunity and make the most of it.
Are you entering the fight angry? I mean, when you hear something like that, like the UFC is kind of betting against you or something, are you pissed off?
I mean, I'm not pissed off. I mean, I feel a little disrespected, just because I feel like you look at my first four fights and you're like, oh, this guy's not a high-level UFC-level fighter. You know, if you want to say I was a UFC-level fighter, then you look at my last five. I feel like you can look in there and you can see maybe a boring performance or something like that you want to call it. But you can also look in there and be like, this guy's got some real skills and a real possibility of being a top level fighter. And I think that with Ryan fighting Ryan, you know, he's a top 20 fighter. He was ranked top 15 two fights ago, and it gives me this opportunity to really showcase, hey, I'm a high level fighter and I can be a real contender in this division. And then really, you know, people kept saying, oh, you gotta find us an opponent that you can destroy. So I told Sean, no, fuck you, find an opponent you think's gonna destroy me. Then let's find out, right? That's why I was trying to fight. Hey, let's fight Mike Perry. Let's fight a Cowboy Cerrone. You know, they haven't given me any names like that. You know, they haven't given me an opportunity to be high on a card, fight a high-level name or a guy that's going to really try to take me out. Let's fight a guy like that. I'm not scared of that. I've welcomed opportunities like that. I've welcomed fights like that. Those guys don't scare me. Listen, I'm telling you right now, those guys are easy fights. The platform to beat a guy like a Mike Perry or Donald Cerrone has been laid out time and time again. It's just clean, crisp striking, aggressive boxing. And really, I think that, you know, that's the fight after I beat Ryan that I want. You know, I think that no other fight would make sense other than a high level, a high spot on a top card or a top level 15 fighter. But before I get too far ahead of myself, right, I got Ryan LaFleur, that's a real, real tough fighter that I have to go out and put away.
Right, so there's Tony Martin laying out, saying, listen, he thinks they put him against Ryan LaFleur because they're the two most boring fighters on the roster, and he thinks Sean Shelby hates him. So,
got to grapple that shit out. Grapple that shit out.
How great is that? He's like, I want to get him on the mat. Let's work it out.
This is going to be a good fight. I think this is a good fight. I mean, I like LaFleur.
I do, too.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure who's telling him that they're, like, boring fighters. I don't think that Sean or somebody's gonna be like, bro, you guys fight suck, you know, whatever. But you know, he might just have some people around him, you know, chirping his ear, maybe giving him wrong information. But I think that fight's gonna be a good fight to get it started. So
I do.
It's a good early prelims card, man.
I think this card is gonna be fun. I mean, I know we say that a lot, but usually when we point it out that we think it's gonna be fun, it's because we're right.
Yeah.
I do think it's cool. I think the UFC put together a really nice card top to bottom, when in reality, anytime you know Conor McGregor's on a card, you could probably just put one fight on there and not worry about it. But I think they put some pretty intriguing matchups on here. And
yeah,
so
I agree.
I'm excited about it. All right, well, listen, it's been a busy one. It's getting late. We got to get up for official weigh-ins in the morning. Let's keep our fingers crossed and knock on wood. Nothing goes wrong in the morning. Hopefully by the time this podcast gets to everybody, we haven't found out that the entire event has been scrapped for some poor reason. Ceremonials, we'll have that in the afternoon. Quintet 3, by the way,
yep,
is here in Las Vegas. It's on UFC Fight Pass. We had a chance to talk to Kazushi Sakuraba, which was a true honor earlier this week. And I think the event is going to be phenomenal. Really wanted to attend it, and still may. I'm still trying to figure things out. But I got to say, we did also get an invitation to Nemirov, which is the UFC's new official vodka, and they're hosting a party. And it's not that that's what interests me. It's just that TJ Dillashaw, Kevin Lee, and Forrest Griffin will be there giving interviews. And at the end of the day, we're all about capturing content for MMA Junkie.
Right.
And if that means that some vodka is being poured along the way, I mean, we'll sacrifice because that's the type of guys we are.
We
take it for the team. So if you're not going to be at the vodka party, I definitely suggest you tune in to Quintet 3. I'm into it. I'm at least going to be watching the replay on Fight Pass. And who knows? Maybe we'll go warm up at the party, and then we'll go see a little quintet too.
You never know. You never know. And if you guys need more information on the quintet stuff, you can find that at quintet-fight.com and /en if you want the English.
The concept's cool. Misha Tate's going to be on the call with Sean Wheelock. But bottom line, if you haven't heard, it's 5-man teams. They have to weigh. The total team has to weigh under a certain amount, so you can play with that the way you want. You can have big guys, small guys. It's kind of like remember Nintendo ice hockey back in the day or whatever. You could have like a skinny guy, a medium guy, a fat guy, or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's like that. You can mix and match your team. And then what's cool about it is you submit your order without anybody knowing what everybody else's order is. You submit your bout order, basically your team order, and that's how the matches go. But the winner stays on the mat. So again, it's going to be Uriah Faber versus Kazushi Sakuraba is one that we're guaranteed to get. But whoever wins stays on and could end up fighting a bigger guy after that.
Right.
You know, you could end up potentially having, which I think everybody's praying happens, you could potentially have Uriah Faber versus Josh Barnett just to see the ridiculousness of it.
They did switch it up. If you saw the list, it was supposed
to be Barnett
to
number
was supposed
three.
To be two. Yeah. So then it was like, okay, there could be a possibility. But making it through two guys, that's going to be
that'd be a big ass for Uriah Faber. But it's possible.
That's tough.
And here's what's cool as well. So then it's a 4-team tournament. But then when you go to the next round, you have to flip your order and you have to go the other way.
Gotcha.
So instead of 1-5, you go 5-1. So you have to be careful the way you pick your team. It's not like you can just say, well, we've got this stud grappler and we're going to stick him at number one. Because then, you know, he's the last guy the next round. It looks like to me what everybody tries to do is put their ace at number three. You know, so you're kind of right in the middle both ways. But it's a cool concept.
Ace.
I think it's fun. I mean, I get that grappling isn't MMA, but for something about this concept, it's kind of fun. It's different. So
yeah, it's neat.
Watch that. We'll be watching as well. We just may not be watching from cage side because, I mean, it's these interviews and some vodka.
Got to be getting the interviews.
Got to get the interviews.
Yeah.
All right. In the meantime, we got to get out of here. We got to get some sleep. Early weigh-ins. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.